Well, hey, good morning, everybody.
Good to see you guys. If you are new, is it still raining out? Is it? Kind of. All right, sorry. It's a dreary Sunday, but so thankful that you guys are here. Don't worry, it's only going to rain for about the next 8 days, so we're good. But if you are new here, my name is John Wagler, and I'm part of the team, and it's an honor to have you guys with us here today. As Corey said earlier, we really put a lot of time and effort into making this a safe place to explore your faith. Where we hope you'll discover purpose, that you'll be known in community and go out and make a difference. And so I'm just so thankful that you are here. Next Sunday is our fourth birthday, which is really cool. If you guys have been here for, we love to party here. And so if you've been here for our birthdays, we love to just go after it. And so next Sunday will be an incredible Sunday to invite people to. Well, every Sunday is, but in particular next Sunday, we have cake, we have other things happening, and it's going to be a super fun time to just celebrate what God has been doing over these last 4 years, and just really excited. Even thinking about it on the way here this morning, you know, we started off with 20 people, and to think in 4 years just to see what God has done has been really incredible. And so we will celebrate that hard next week, and so it'll be super fun. I was also thinking today about, you know, every week I share a story about generosity and why it matters, and so, because I don't ever want you guys to just think we talk about giving just to get you to give money, that there's a really big reason for it. And I was just reminded this week after hearing someone's story about how they came into this church and with a lot of, as they put it, baggage. And they had been really hurt by the church. They had and let that transpire into how they viewed God. And then through just being here, and they reluctantly came, but being here, God has done a miraculous transformation in their hearts. They view their entire life differently, who God is very differently, and I even talked about how much they've just taken steps of growing in their faith. And so when you give, that's why it's such a big deal, what's happening, not only with what we do with our partners that we have here in Richmond, but you know, the kind of what's happening here is such a big deal. So if you give in the share boxes or online, I just want to say thank you. Your generosity matters, and it's having an incredible impact. And so thank you so much for doing that. So we're in this new series called Breakthrough. Just out of curiosity, how many of you guys have an area in your life that you'd like a breakthrough in? Yeah, pretty much everybody. And you guys, the others are liars, so it's no big deal. And so, everyone's got a breakthrough that they need somewhere in their life for some reason or another. And every year, we do a survey at Easter. And on that Easter survey, we'll put a question. And usually we do that because we let you guys kind of like dictate what the fall series will be like. And so this year, the question that we, or the way we phrased it was just simply, hey, what's an area of your life that you need a breakthrough in? And then here's what happened. And this has happened all 4 times that we've done an Easter survey. You guys answer everything the same. And here it's like, oh, I need a breakthrough in stress. I need a breakthrough in anxiety. I need a breakthrough in my marriage. I need a breakthrough with money. I need a breakthrough in parenting. What it's like, I didn't even have to see the results, and I knew what they were going to be. And so that led me to think, do I want to do another series that's centered all around topics? Like, hey, here's how you handle stress better, or here's how you deal with difficult circumstances. And so originally that's what I was going to do, and then I just decided a couple weeks ago, I was like, you know what, I'm not going to do that, because everyone answers the same, the questions the same way every year, so clearly it's not working. So I wanted to like do something different this go around in hopes that if we do an Easter survey this time, we'll get different answers. But I wanted to do it differently for this series, and we're going to have a couple guest speakers in it too, but I wanted to create some layers of foundation of like what it really takes to have a breakthrough. Like, so it's not just in theory, that it's like, hey, we've got some practical ways to do it, but there's going to be some core elements that have to be there in order to really have a breakthrough in our life. And so here's what a breakthrough actually is. It is a sudden, dramatic, and important discovery or development. It's a sudden, dramatic, and important discovery or development. You could probably think of some point in your life where you had this breakthrough, whatever it was, but you had a moment where it just, like, everything just clicked, and the light bulb kind of went off, and you just had this, like, breakthrough, and then that's what you're searching for in whatever area that you raised your hand about. And so we want to talk about that. Now, I'm going to help you get started with a breakthrough, just kind of get your mind going a little bit, so even when you walk out today, you are guaranteed to have some kind of breakthrough, all right? So here's the first way I'm going to do this. What is this picture? What is that? Somebody say sorbet. What's another word for it? Sherbet, right? Here's your first breakthrough. Did you guys know that it's actually spelled S-H-E-R-B-E-T? It's sherbet, okay? Not sherbert, okay? Lacey hates it. Like, every time I've ever ordered it, I'm like, hey, can I have a sherbet? She, like, hates it that I do it. She's like, just call it sherbet. Everyone calls it sherbet. I was like, it is not the way it's spelled. And so... there's your first breakthrough. I just saved you from making a fool out of yourself next time. It's sherbet. All right, here's another one. So when someone is like a lock for a job, or they are a lock for a victory, or they're just like, there's no doubt about it. You say someone's a blank in for something. What is that? A shoo-in, right? So think about how you would spell it. All right, so would you spell it this way? Because that is the correct way to spell it. And so some of you guys would have had normal shoe there, so I'm saving you a little grammar police for you. And so that's how you actually do it. Shoe is actually related to kind of a horse term and from way back. So that's been where that's coming from. The last one is this. Do you guys know the song Blank Space by Taylor Swift? You guys know that song? Okay, most of you guys know that song. One of the lines in there is the most misquoted lyric in all of Spotify. And so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to play 10 seconds of it, and then when it stops, you guys just sing out what you naturally think the lyric is, okay? So go ahead and do it. All right. How many of you guys mentioned Starbucks? Okay, or Starcross or something. That is not the lyrics to it. The actual lyric has got a long list of ex-lovers. Okay, so for those of you that don't know that, now you do. So there's your breakthrough, all right? So you got something to walk away with here this morning. You guys are questioning all your Taylor Swift lyrics right now in your head. But here's the big deal about, and here's the line I wrote, about a breakthrough and what we, why we really need it and what actually prevents us from experiencing a breakthrough. And that's this, that we won't experience a breakthrough until we start asking the right questions. So we start asking the right questions. I think the problem or the reason that whenever we take that survey and we answer the same thing over and over and over and over and over again is because we aren't asking the right questions. And on top of that, we aren't actually listening to the answers. You know, as a parent, I think one of the most annoying thing that happens as a parent, and yes, being a parent is annoying sometimes. And so one of the most annoying things that happens as a parent is when you tell your child to do something and they don't listen, right? And they come back and you're like, I've already answered that question. Why didn't you listen to that? And I wonder if sometimes that's how God is. I know he doesn't get annoyed at us, but like, I wonder if somebody's like, I have answered this for you already. And I think that's the part of the problem. We don't listen to the answers, but I actually think the biggest problem is we're not asking the right questions. You know, sometimes people say something like this, I want to break through my money. I'm like, okay, well, what's the question you're asking? And a lot of times, like, how do I make more? Is that a valid question? Sure, but is it the right question? Is that the right question to be asking? Or maybe are there better questions that have better answers that will allow you to actually experience what you should? And so maybe better questions are, how do I sign up for Financial Peace University at Hill City during small groups? That's a great question that's easy to answer, that actually coming up this September. That's a great question to ask. Or how about, how do I honor God with my money? That's a great question to ask. And then you have an answer to go off of with that, okay? So it's important to ask the right questions. Another question I might hear is like, well, how do I become a better parent? And it's a great question to ask, but are there follow-up questions? Like, what are the most important things to instill in my child? Is that what you're asking? Who is someone that I look up to as a parent that could mentor me? Is that a good question to ask and get the answer to? How do I sign up for the parenting class that Hill City is offering for all of our parents this small group season? Another great question to ask if you need help. There is an answer for that one. And so there are important things that the type of questions that we're asking are so important. And so are the answers. So we've got to learn how to ask the right questions. And so each week we'll have some practical questions to ask ourselves. But today I'm actually going to focus a little bit more on the spiritual side of this. And we're going to look at this guy named David. Now, if you're familiar with the Bible, you know who David is. If you're not familiar with the Bible, just a little bit of background on David. He was someone who became king. You might have heard the story of David before, about David and Goliath. This is probably the most famous story of David. David is actually the character in the Bible that I actually struggle with the most. I appreciate who he is, but I struggle with how elevated he is in how we talk about David, even when we're often raised in Sunday school, or if you grew up in Sunday school or as a child, people would be like, be like David, be strong like David and courageous like David, be just like David. Here's the thing, when you learn a little bit more about David, I don't want my kids to be like David. And so there's something there about David. And I get it, he's tied into the lineage of Jesus. And there's some big things about David. And I get all that stuff. But he's someone I actually struggle with when and how we talk about him. But David's like an interesting character in the Bible. He was a king. And he had his moments of being a great king and a not so great king. He had his moments of being a good friend and a not so good friend and everything. The thing that you end up liking about David is his humanity when you kind of learn more about David. But there's this one story in particular about David that I've always had a really hard time with and how it's told. And it's the story about David and Bathsheba. And again, this is a fairly familiar story for most, but the story about David and Bathsheba is an interesting one, because when you're telling it to kids growing up, you're like, and here's how it kind of typically sounds like. You'll say something like this. All right, so we all know David, and David was a great king, and all the kids are like, yay, David, right? And so, like, and here's what happened in this story with David. He saw this beautiful woman, and this woman was out there. She was taking a bath, and David thought to himself, I really want that woman. But here was the problem. David, Bathsheba was actually married to someone else. But because David was king, like, he was able to kind of get Bathsheba. And so even though it was his friend's wife who was actually out in battle, and so David and Bathsheba, they laid together. And what happened was then she got pregnant. And when she got pregnant, David was very worried what was going to happen. And so he brought Uriah back in from the battle field and try to straighten things out, but it didn't work out like David wanted. And in the end, Bathsheba had a baby, and Uriah, the husband, actually got killed in battle. It was crazy. And but then David asked for forgiveness, and like, David's a great king, so be like David, right? That's what we do. Here's the problem. That's not the actual story. And it's one of the reasons I struggle so much with David. David, here's what actually happened. David was the king. But David fell into pride and power and greed and manipulation. And David actually at that point in time was really lazy as a leader. He was a bad leader at this moment because he should have been out to battle with his guys, but he wasn't. And so what David did with a heart full of lust was standing on the roof of his home. He did look at Bathsheba, but he didn't just say, ooh, I'd like to have her. He said, give me her. We would phrase that now as sexual abuse. We would phrase that as, in all likelihood, he probably raped her because she was not a willing participant in this. And so what ended up happening was she did get pregnant. And then when David's decision was to not take ownership over it, instead he tried to bring one of his best friend, the top 30 men that he had, this guy named Uriah, who was out to battle, which David should have been at, but he wasn't. He was out there, and he brings Uriah back to try to convince him to sleep with his wife so then he could cover it all up. The problem was Uriah was filled with loyalty and integrity and to do things the right way. And so he said, I can't do that while my other guys are out there in battle. And so as David decides to do, well, I know how I'll fix it. I'll send him out to the front line to become an accomplice to murder, is basically what happened. The end result of that was Bathsheba did have a baby, but that baby did die. And then the end result was generations of really awful parenting on David's side, but just generational unrest within the family because of the decisions that David made. That is David. And so what's interesting, though, about the, I think, why David is actually attractional in the story is not because of what type of king he was or that he was courageous or the kind of cool stories where it talks about him wrestling with a lion and stuff like that. I think the thing about David that is attractive, that is important for us to see in terms of a breakthrough, is his humanity and his writings. You see, I think there are elements to David that we resonate with more than we care to admit. There are times in our lives where we've manipulated people. There are times in our life where we've lusted after people. There are times in our life where we've lied to get our way. There are times in our life where we've been poor leaders of other people. There are times in our lives where if we had the power to do something, we probably would have been an accomplice to murder if we really cared to admit it. And so what ends up happening is David had all this, and in him we kind of see ourselves, or at least some part of ourselves. And what David does is he wrote a lot of the Psalms. And so, if you're not familiar with the Bible, if you were to just open the Bible to the middle, you'd probably hit a Psalm. And there are 150 of them in our Bibles, and David wrote 75 or 76 of them. And so in his writings, we get to see a lot of his humanity, his emotion, the way he kind of goes from place to place. And honestly, we get to see a lot of breakthroughs in his life because of what he did. And one in particular was off of this story of David and Bathsheba, where he writes Psalm 51. And we're going to read that entire psalm here this morning. But we get to see it's a pivotal moment. It doesn't, like, after this story, does David, like, the best dad ever? No. Is David the best king ever? No. But something does shift for David, and this does kind of, it gives him a breakthrough and starts seeing his life actually very differently. And so I wanted to focus on this passage because I think there are a few things for us to kind of use as the baseline for how we experience a great breakthrough in our lives. So Psalm 51, we'll start off in verse 1. It says, "Have mercy on me, O God." Remember, this is David writing after this event with Bathsheba. "Have mercy on me, O God, because of your unfailing love. Because of your great compassion, blot out the stain of my sins. Wash me clean from my guilt, purify me from my sin. For I recognize my rebellion. It haunts me day and night. Against you and you alone have I sinned. I have done what is evil in your sight. You will be proved right in what you say, and your judgment against me is just. For I was born a sinner, yes, from the moment my mother conceived me. But you desire honesty from the womb, teaching me wisdom even there. Purify me from my sins, and I will be clean. Wash me, and I will be whiter than snow. Oh, give me back my joy again. You have broken me. Now let me rejoice. Don't keep looking at my sins. Remove the stain of my guilt. Create in me a clean heart, O God. Renew a loyal spirit within me. Do not banish me from your presence, and don't take your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation, and make me willing to obey you. Then I will teach your ways to rebels, and they will return to you. Forgive me for shedding blood, O God, who saves. Then I will joyfully sing of your forgiveness. Unseal my lips, O Lord, that my mouth may praise you. You do not desire a sacrifice, or I would offer one. You do not want a burnt offering. The sacrifice you desire is a broken spirit. You will not reject a broken and repentant heart, O God. Look with favor on Zion and help her. Rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Then you will be pleased with sacrifices offered in the right spirit, with burnt offerings and the whole burnt offerings, and then bulls will again be sacrificed on your altar." And so we'll talk about the sacrificial part here in a minute, but I want us to see a few things off this passage about what does it really take to have a breakthrough, not just to think about it theoretically, but to actually have something take place. And here's the first thing that we kind of pull from this passage is we've got to come to grips with our part in it. We've got to come to grips with our part. And David does something really cool as you kind of look through those first four verses in particular. He says this, he starts talking about to wash me clean of this guilt, to purify me from sin, for I recognize my rebellion and it haunts me day and night. Here's what David is doing in that moment. He is confessing his role. He's confessing his part in it. And he understands that it was his sin, his mistakes or his way that he was against God that actually led him down this path that caused this circumstance in his life. And so for some of us in this room, and actually I would say for most of us in this room, when we raised our hand for that breakthrough that we want, the truth is a lot of it has to do with our own actions. our own choices, the things that we've decided to do that have gotten us to that point. And it's absolutely critical for us to confess that, to understand that, to see, all right, this is my role in it. One of the things that I'll do when I sit down with couples for counseling, I will ask them, I'll say, all right, what's your part in this? And they'll say, no, it's his or it's hers. And I'm like, no, what's your part? I get what you're saying, but what is your part in this? Well, why do you need to do that? Well, you have to, if you really want to experience like a breakthrough and an awareness and wisdom, you've got to understand your role in it first so that you can understand what actually needs to be taken care of, so you can actually begin to see what questions you are supposed to be asking. And for some of you else, you might be have said, oh, it's about dealing with stress, or it's about dealing with fear. And I'm like, okay, so those moments that you're really fearful of, let's say, like what's actually happening there? Like what's your role in that fear? You're like, none of it's mine. It's crazy out there. I'm like, no. You have a role in it, right? We're only born with two fears. It's loud noises and a fear of height, of heights. So everything else is learned, okay? So if that's the case, then we've played a role in it. And so there's a way for us to kind of get out of it. Now, you might also be saying, well, hold on, Wax. Like, the thing I need a breakthrough from was done to me. I had no role in it. It was done to me. And in that, I would say I'm not belittling that in any way, shape, or form, because that is incredibly difficult. And man, the amount of stories I've heard around that in the last 15 years of ministry have been crazy. But I would say this. When you think about stories of people that have come out of some awful scenarios, I think about a story about a woman who told me about being raped. And she said for years, it like ruined every relationship that she had and everything. But what she realized that it was unforgiveness in her heart that didn't enable her to actually fully heal. It wasn't about restoring that relationship with that guy who did it or anything like that. And it wasn't about belittling anything. It was unbelievably difficult, but what she said was, I realized that holding on to that, my part in it was holding on to it, was actually creating this identity, and I started identifying more with what happened to me there than actually who I could be. And it changed everything. And so even in that scenario for you, if that's you, we have to start thinking what maybe I'm holding on to that is actually hurting me rather than helping me heal. And that's an important part in the process of a breakthrough for anybody, is taking that part in and saying, okay, let me put some words to that so that I can start asking the right questions around it and discovering the right answers that will then allow for that full healing, that full breakthrough to actually begin to stir up inside of me and eventually happen. You know, he continues on, David does, as he's writing, and he says this in verse 4. He acknowledges that his sin is against God. And I would say this. Now, that word sin, if you're not familiar with the word sin, it's this idea of missing the mark, that there's kind of perfection and holiness of God. And then when we don't reach that or attain that or go along with that, that's, the Bible defines it as sin. That takes us away from God. It separates us from God. And so what David says is this sin that I've had, and he even kind of phrases it at one point. He goes, man, I've been sinful since in the womb. Like I knew, it's like, and as when you have kids, you kind of know that a little bit. Like you don't have to teach your kid to be selfish. You know what I mean? Like you're not like, hey, all right, buddy, take that from her. Yeah, that's good. Like you don't have to do that. Like that's like, you know, that just, it's a natural innate thing that happens. But what ends up happening is David's describing like, hey, okay, it's my sin against you. And here's why that's important. I think we belittle sin way too much. And here's what we'll do. Like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. Or we justify things. Or we're like, I'll make it right with her. I'll make it right with him. And then we're good. See, what David does is something that I think is actually really pivotal. He goes, it's against you, God. And so here's what this means. I sin against you, God, and it's really against you, God, and that breaks this relationship with you and kind of takes me down a path that you don't want for me. And so it kind of raises the stakes of what sin does in our lives. And as he begins to describe, it's against you, God, and here's what happens. If I can make that right with God through our relationship with him, then what will happen is then I'll then make it right with people. See, when we only kind of concentrate on how to make it right with people, the end result of that is that we think we can control everything. We think our sin's not that big of a deal. It's like, I'll just manage it. It's not that bad. I'll take care of it. But when we raise the stakes to it, it changes everything. And that's what David is actually doing here. And so that's an important piece. In verse 5, he kind of puts out there this reality that we're not as good as we think we are. And we all know that. We've talked about that here. But as David begins to do that, he is confessing kind of his part in all of this. And that helps him start taking steps towards this breakthrough. Now, the problem is our pride gets in the way. Our arrogance gets in the way. Our narcissism gets in the way. And some of you guys are thinking, like, I'm not a narcissist. I don't make my life about me. I'm not image driven and everything else. And I'm like, all right, hold on a second. Let me tell you about narcissism. I'm going to read you some things and see if maybe this defines you at all. You're a perfectionist, controlling, entitled, constantly blame other people. You don't like to be told no. You don't understand boundaries. You have a tough time saying I'm sorry. You lack empathy towards people you disagree with. You don't understand why it's a problem to just base decisions on emotions. You take credit for anything positive and then blame others for anything negative. You operate out of fear. You're afraid of rejection or ridicule. You have a doom and gloom kind of attitude. You harbor a lot of shame, but not guilt. Shame and guilt are two very different things. You can't really be vulnerable with anybody. You're not a team player. You love a good humble brag. And when asked, you can't remember a time you failed. So some of you are like, I'm not all of those. But we're all some of it in a little bit, in some ways, right? We all got a little of that circling around in us, and probably more than we care to admit. And so what ends up happening is that, well, we allow that narcissism to take place and we kind of justify our sin and kind of don't, like, accept our role in it. The end result is our pride builds up, and then we will never experience that breakthrough that we need. We don't even know what humility is. And I wrote this down this week, that we won't be humble until we come to grips with our own narcissism. Until we really start wrestling with that part of it and say, man, we won't experience humility at all until we're willing to admit the areas of our life that we're narcissists there. And so that becomes the first part. So that's coming to grips with your part. The second thing that we see in this passage is we need to change our mindset. We need to change your mindset. To think our mindset doesn't matter actually goes against the way God created our bodies, created our brains to work, created how our brains can actually kind of heal themselves a little bit and stuff like that through just how we think about life and how we think about scenarios, everything. Our mindset is a really big deal. Now, I will say this. I am not an anti-medication. So some of you right now are like, are you saying that I don't need medication? Are you saying that? I'm not saying that. I'm not anti-meds. I get it. Sometimes people need medication, okay? So I'm not an anti-meds kind of person. However, every research you will read, if people are taking medication, will also go along with this, that the mindset is critical to the change in people. Otherwise, you just rely on medicine, and then you need more and more and more and more and more meds, okay? And so the reality is, hey, if you need to take meds, I get it. Like, that's cool. I'm not judging you in any way, shape, or form. But the mindset part of this is critical. How we think about our lives is critical. How we think about our circumstances is critical. How we experience healing through that, like, it's got to come. Our minds and how we think about it is a huge part of this. We talked about this in Ephesians 4 last week, that there's this new nature, this new thing that happens over us. Romans 12 says, renew our minds, that we are to think differently. That's part of it. But as we kind of are longing for this breakthrough, part of it is how we think about this. Listen, I believe you and I were uniquely created by God, no doubt. But our circumstances that we go through are not unique. Again, that is not to belittle anything any of us have gone through. Because I know some of your stories in here are massive things. But our stories are not unique. Like, we can always find somebody that's come out of that or been in the same thing, and they have, like, they've got a story to tell. And so there is a way of kind of just in terms of, like, how we think about our circumstances is truly critical. And it can reshape our entire lives. It can reshape our brains. And what we see with David, actually, he begins to do that. And verses 10 through 12, he starts talking a little differently. And he says it this way. He says, create in me, what? Something new, a new heart. Create in me. We used to sing, create me the right spirit within me. Like the spirit of God to work within me, to lead me to truth, to lead me to view this differently. That's possible. But instead, what ends up happening is when we get stuck in our mindset, eventually the end result is we'll just complain about stuff and complain about everything and get just really negative. So if you've been around negative people, maybe your breakthrough is like, I want to be more positive and encouraging, then like here would be like a practical thing you could do. Stop like listening to the news or watching the news, right? I mean, again, we'll just process this a little bit, and I don't care what side of anything you fall on. There is no like truly factual news out there. So does it make sense for us to fill our minds constantly with half-truths or sometimes blatant lies? And it's happening on all sides of every issue, right? So just kind of like, and then expect us to be really positive afterwards. It doesn't even make sense, but we do stuff like that. And so like even just kind of thinking about like, how do I change my mindset and move into things differently? So we get a little negative. We also start complaining a lot. And there's nothing compelling about complainers. Like you're not, like when you're around someone who's complaining, you're like, yes! Ah, oh, feels so good. I've just been on all that positivity all the time. Feels good to hear someone complain. Like no one's like that. And so there's nothing compelling. Because here's what happens with people who complain. They don't come up with solutions. They actually end up multiplying the problem. And so when all we do is complain and complain and complain and complain and complain and complain, complain, like all you're doing is like the problem just goes pop, 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 pop. I was talking with somebody this week, and he was talking about a friend that he has, that they're struggling in their marriage. And I asked him, I was like, well, what are they doing about it? And he goes, nothing. And he was so mad. He's like, not doing anything about it. He goes, all they're doing is complaining about their marriage. He's like, and he goes, they won't even talk to you about it. They won't even, he goes, they're just going to sit there and complain. They got disconnected from church and da, 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 kind of going on and on. And you just kind of see that what's happening is the problem just multiplies and multiplies and multiplies and multiplies and multiplies. Well, why is that? Because they're stuck in this mindset of negativity. They're stuck in this mindset of complaining. They're stuck in this mindset, kind of this woe is me mindset about everything in life. But God's got something greater. Like, what if we did something like this? God, I want you to create in me something new. For some of us in here, that might be the first time you say something like this. I wanna follow you, and I just wanna say yes to you. I want you to create something new in me, and I wanna view my life differently. I wanna view it through your lens. I wanna view it in a way that I've never done it before. I wonder if something would change there. I wonder if all of a sudden that breakthrough we've been longing for becomes a little more realistic. The third thing and the last thing is this, and we're gonna talk about this a lot over this series, and it's gonna be to live with perspective. To live with perspective. Perspective has seemed to become invisible in our culture. And, you know, we're such binary thinkers. It's crazy. And I hate it so much. And so what ends up happening is, you know, we kind of put our stake in the ground on a certain issue or whatever it is, and we don't have any perspective. A lack of perspective means a lack of love of people. See, we don't learn when we want our perspective and our only, and like that's it. We don't learn that way. We don't grow that way. And so when we freak out about certain things that are happening in culture, I'm like, hey, here's an idea. Let's pause for a second, get some perspective of where they're coming from and why. Maybe we learn something. Maybe It changed something. Instead of being like, nope, I know the answer. And so what happens is like when we don't live with perspective, then we don't live with love. That's the end result. And so I want us to be able to start thinking about, all right, what's my perspective on whatever issue? So again, whatever you thought when I said, what do you need a breakthrough in? Like, what's your perspective on that? Like, what is your current perspective on that thing that you want a breakthrough in? What is it? Is it tainted in some way because of maybe how you were raised or the people you were around? Do you need someone else to kind of speak wisdom and truth or life into that? What are you doing to kind of get a different outlook on it? What are you doing about it? We need that kind of perspective. I love what David does, because I think this is the key to all of it. In verse 17, he says this: the sacrifice you desire is a broken spirit. You will not reject a broken and repentant heart, O God. This is the key to like the breakthrough. This is us coming and saying, I don't know it all. I don't know it all, God. I'm going to trust. How about this? I'm going to trust that you're bigger than my problem. See, we get that reversed too much. I think a lot of times our perspective is that our problem is too big for God. But what if we changed our mindset? What if we got a different perspective and we started thinking it this way? God, I'm going to trust that you're bigger than whatever problem that I'm going through. I'm going to open up my heart. I'm going to open up my life to a different perspective, a different hope. I'm going to open my life up to what you have for me and start this journey or continue this journey. What if that was how we approached everything? I think that there's a spiritual side to this, of course, and there is a practical side. I'm going to give us three practical questions to ask, and then I'm going to pray for us over the spiritual stuff. But here are three practical things you can ask yourself to kind of start for the groundwork of whatever your issue is. The first one is this: what would a humble person do? What would a humble person do? If you're like, I have no idea, I'm such a narcissist. There's a good start. So what would a humble person do? The second one is, what is your role in it? What is your role in it? Important to have answers to these things. All right, if we don't have answers to these things, you'll never get a breakthrough. It's just the way it works. The third thing is this: what plan do I have in place? What plan do I have in place? So if you're like, man, I need a breakthrough with my money, I would say, okay, tell me about your budget. Tell me about the plan you want in your money. Man, I got a breakthrough. We need a breakthrough in our marriage. Okay, what's your plan for that? If you're like, man, we don't have one, we're just going to pray about it. I'm like, let me tell you how God has already answered that. You need a plan. All right, so we need a plan. Those are practical things that have to be there. Now, I want to pray about the spiritual side here, because I think we all have an answer to give there, one way or another. And so I'm going to pray for us for some of us, it might be the first time saying yes to Jesus. For others, this is like, man, I need something new instilled in me for a breakthrough. So will you bow your heads? God, today as we are coming to grips with the stuff that we're dealing with, and for some folks in this room, it's a really big deal. But we all have an area of our life that, or areas of our life that we need a breakthrough in. And so, God, I hope that we approach you with just humility. I hope that we are willing to approach you with a broken spirit and an open heart. And God, that we would trust that you're bigger than our problems. And for some folks in here this morning, it actually starts with a yes to you, and this would be for the first time ever. But they never actually decided to follow you. They never decided to put their hope and their trust in you and to believe in you. And so maybe that's your step today, to say yes. For others in here, you've been a believer for a while, and you know that part of you, but the reality is you've gotten away from the hope of Christ. You've moved away from trusting God. You trust your fear more than you trust God. you've given in to stress more than you've given in to the comfort and peace that you can experience through Jesus. You've given in to other things, whether relationally or whatever it is, that maybe your moment today is a yes to saying, you know what, I need something new. God, would you create in me something new? Renew that spirit within me. God, we believe that you're bigger than our problems. We believe you're bigger than our circumstances. We believe that through you is how we experience freedom and peace and a fullness of life. We give this to you. In your name we pray, everybody said, amen. Before you guys get out of here, if you did say yes to Jesus today, we've got people at the What's Next Lounge ready to talk to you and would love to help you take some next steps in your journey. We want to walk alongside of you with that. Or if you just want to connect, there are people there to just connect and pray with you as well. But thank you guys so much for being here today. Enjoy week one of NFL football. And we will see you guys, hopefully, hurricane depending, next Sunday.